This is episode number 2.
Thank goodness. Chocolate is gluten-free.
Welcome to the Innovateology podcast, where it is all about unleashing the creative side to find those brilliant, disruptive ideas to validate and build innovative solutions to solve life's problems.
And welcome to Innovateology podcast number 2. With your host Mary and our co-hosts today, Linda and Melissa. Today we're talking about food sensitivities, intolerance, and allergies. Oh my. So with over 3 million new cases of food intolerances being reported each year in the U.S. and a growing awarenesses of intolerances and allergies, how do we deal with this? In family get-togethers, networking, and corporate dinners, or look at this creatively to solve that isolation of food insensitivity and intolerances and allergies in a social situation. So today we're going to be looking at a couple of different areas, and with Linda and Melissa on the line as well in the podcast, I'm going to turn it over to Linda and she's going to frame up the situation.
Okay, thanks Mary. So let's begin. Research publications in the U.S. National Library of Medicine tell us that there's evidence indicating that food allergies are increasing in Western populations. The most common food allergens are cow's milk, hen's eggs, wheat, fish, shellfish, peanuts, and tree nuts. While it appears that these allergies occur more often in developed countries, more rigorous research is needed. Even in Western countries, most of what's known about food allergies has been collected through questionnaires and self-reporting rather than diagnostic testing. It is still not known what causes these allergies, why they're on the rise, and why they persist into adulthood. When you learn that you have food sensitivities or that you are the parent of a child or children with food allergies, daily life can become overwhelming. The constant vigilance that is needed is often stressful and anxiety-provoking. Every nutrition choice must be deliberate. You have to consider not only every ingredient of every food, but also how the food was prepared in order to weigh the risk for cross-contamination. In addition, when you live with food allergies, you have to educate your communities. This includes relatives, neighbors, teachers, friends, and even colleagues. So in today's podcast, we will work to share with you some tips on how to enjoy social settings while not risking your health. We'll offer some strategies to help you live well with food sensitivities and allergies, and we'll offer resources to help you stay informed about scientific learnings and treatments for food allergies. Of course, Mary and Melissa, as well as all those listening, know that food is part of being social. Can you imagine celebrating a birthday without cake and ice cream? Or watching the Super Bowl without chips and dip? For an increasing number of people, foregoing these and other foods is not a choice. It's a requirement that is essential for daily survival. For those with food sensitivities and allergies, social gatherings pose challenges and often bring a lot of anxiety. The tedious investigation of food labels and beverage labels is a daily ritual, and any lapse in vigilance can have serious, even life-threatening consequences. This has been the life of my sister-in-law, Helen, who has 3 boys with varying food allergies. Perhaps fortunately, Helen is a caterer and events planner. Over the years, she's wowed us again and again with her celebration innovations. As years passed, though, we learned an adult relative has celiac disease and her daughters have gluten sensitivities. For a few years, this challenged our holiday gatherings. When dinner was ready, the family would separate as everyone headed for the appropriate food stations. But perhaps miraculously, one Thanksgiving, Helen decided she wanted to have the family enjoy the meal together. Being the creative chef that she is, Helen found a way to prepare a traditional Thanksgiving feast, complete with stuffing and all the fixings that accommodated the dairy, nut, and gluten allergies in the family. The food was delicious, and many of us could not believe how she so masterfully accommodated everyone. Let's face it, those without allergies want to enjoy the traditional treats without sacrificing. So Helen showed us how she was able to ingeniously innovate a holiday menu to the joy and delight of everyone.
So Linda, let's ask a couple of questions here. So how did she do it?
Well, that's a great question. And perhaps the most important point here is that Helen began by believing it could be done. It is so easy to become overwhelmed when planning a complex menu for many people with various sensitivities and allergies. So it's important to dissect the meal itself, consider the core ingredients, and the essential features for each beloved dish. For instance, Helen looked at the flavor, texture, smell, and even color of the food and the dishes that everyone loved. Helen created the luscious texture and aroma of stuffing with gluten-free ingredients. And she ingeniously substitutes and spices her dishes. And she also approaches her menus like a conductor of an orchestra, in that she artfully prepares the dishes so that they complement each other to enhance the overall dining experience.
So what resources can Helen share for those that have food allergies?
Well, those who live with food allergies know that there's not a wealth of information and resources to support them. But fortunately, there are some advocacy groups like FACT, and that's P-H-A-C-T, which stands for Parents Having Allergic Children Team. That's located in Chester County, Pennsylvania. And FEAST, which stands for Food and Environmental Allergy Support Team, which is also in the Philadelphia area. FACT was founded in 2004 by a young mother who came to feel frustrated and very isolated due to the lack of resources to support parents of children with food allergies. And she was certain that there were other parents like her, so she started FACT as a Yahoo group, so moms could have a night out to connect and learn from each other. The group's mission is to help families who manage food allergies to connect with others like them and support each other so that they and their children may thrive. FACT has a Facebook page where parents may exchange information and support. It's recognized by the nationally known prominent food allergy research and education groups called FARE, that's F-A-R-E, and FACT, spelled F-A-A-C-T. Doctors who diagnose children with allergies point parents to the FARE website to learn about advocacy groups near them. In Pennsylvania, there is a state-approved training and certification program available through the advocacy group FARE. And people who complete the training and certification often provide training at no charge for restaurants, cafeteria staff at businesses, and in schools. One woman trainer shared that she believes that by raising awareness and providing education for the community, she builds an important bridge to enable families with food allergies to engage fully within their communities. Certainly, when families are welcome and able to engage in their communities, the local businesses benefit too. And with the incidence of food allergies increasing, all businesses and community groups should learn how becoming food allergy aware can be simple yet life-saving. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mary for a little bit more about the experience with gluten intolerance.
So thanks, Linda. So all of the websites that Linda mentioned will also be on the show notes of this particular podcast. So you can definitely check us out at innovateology/episode2, and you can get all the show notes and links. So one area that I'll be focusing on today is a little bit around gluten intolerance. So a lot of us are living with a chronic digestive problem that occurs when certain foods are eaten, and then it creates this awkward moment over a meal. For instance, when someone passes around rolls at a dinner table and you don't take one, or you get offered coffee and you say no, thank you, or dessert, you have to say no as well. It sometimes creates a little awkward situation like, why can't you eat that? And before, I would always, just make up a story like, oh, just not in the mood, or, there wasn't enough awareness out there about gluten. So I would have to have a long conversation describing what gluten is, how it reacts with the system, and sometimes bore people. So thankfully, there's been a change happening, and the gluten-sensitive community has grown a lot more, and there's a lot more awareness in restaurants. And even reports have come out showing a 14% increase in revenue by offering a gluten-free menu. So there's incentive for restaurants to change. Also, what's key is there's education of restaurant staff. So training is applied in a way that is practical and is understood by everyone, from dishwashers to servers to chefs. And there's an example of this, one of my favorite restaurants from Red Robin. And Red Robin is also from Seattle, so I've eaten there many of times. And what's interesting is that from Red Robin, they've kind of had this innovative perspective where they've trained their staff to ask about the gluten sensitivity. They not only have a gluten-free menu, but they also have an allergy menu. And when you order a gluten-free item, the server asks, is it an allergy or a preference? And from there, they know how and what to advise you on. This is key for anybody who's dining out with a gluten intolerance.
And Mary, what questions do you ask the restaurant?
So usually before I go out, I usually look online and see what their menu, if they have a gluten-free option. And I'm mindful and call ahead of time if I can't find a menu to ask some more questions. Sometimes it's important to understand what they're offering and understand, you know, are they cutting gluten in the same kitchen? Are they mixing it with other areas? And then also another helpful hint that others have pointed out to me is sometimes if you come with a type card of allergies or intolerances, it helps kind of notify the chef ahead of time if you can communicate this, especially in foreign countries. Also, ask until you feel comfortable. So what I've always done is sometimes it takes five times of asking a question to get the point across and just make sure everybody's clear about your intolerance or allergy. And you don't have to prove anything because ultimately at the end of the day, it's about your health and making you feel. And safety is key, being vigilant. So understanding how a meal is prepared. And don't be afraid to ask if there's croutons on a salad to place them to the side. And if they're mixed in, then ask for another item on the menu. Just kind of understanding those two differences and understanding what you can ask. And never assume. All too often, we tend to assume, and it can be dangerous.
How do you respond to questions about food sensitivity from coworkers?
So I try and be an advocate and educate others now. Gluten-free is becoming more available, and there's definitely options out there. No longer do you have to hide behind a closed door and try and hide your way through not picking up a roll. A lot of times when you start to talk about it, people say, oh, yeah, I have a brother or I have a cousin or, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. So it's no longer an issue. And a lot of times a lot of people embrace it and don't even question it. So some action items to walk away with is do ask your questions. Don't be afraid to say no thank you. And use this moment to teach others and gain awareness about food and intolerance. And there's some other great resources, and I'll definitely post these on the show notes, is there's a site called the Gluten-Free Restaurant Awareness Program, and they offer everything from an ongoing audit that a restaurant. There's also the Triumphs Dining, which is a great guide, and there's over 5,000 gluten-free establishments, including 80 chains, which is huge for the gluten-free community. And also, there's a great website called the Gluten-Free Passport with tips for dining around the world and how to do this, from an allergy card to just ways that you can go about asking. Also, there's a gluten-free travel guide website, and believe it or not, Philadelphia in 2012 gained this award for the best gluten-free, and we never knew that Philly cheesesteaks could have a gluten-free option. This also was abandoned, I guess, in 2015, because as gluten-free has become more aware throughout the world, they no longer needed to do these awards, so that's also a good sign. So with that, those are a few action items. Like I said, I'll post these on the show notes. There's also another intolerance, and that's around glucose, and I'll let Melissa handle a little bit of information around glucose intolerance.
Hi, thanks. This past 6 months, I was diagnosed with a different type of intolerance than Mary, and mine's called glucose intolerance, or as people know it, as prediabetes. I was totally in denial that I had this because I didn't have any risk factors at all. No family history, no BMI. I exercised every day, had perfect blood pressure. All my cholesterol level, and I even had a normal fasting blood sugar. But what I didn't know is there's a test called an A1C that averages out your glucose sugars for the last 3 months, and it told quite a difference. Now, my A1C is high. So basically, my doctor said, you know, you have prediabetes, cut down on the carbs and sugar, and then walk out of the room. Kind of shock. Because it's scary to find out that 70% prediabetics have prediabetes. They really don't know will. And having too much glucose in your bloodstream is just not good. It's too high. It actually damages blood vessels, starts to damage kidney, mind. So it's not a good thing. So I decided I need to, you know, deal with this really head on. So I went back to my doctor's office and just stopped and asked if I could talk to the nurse. And I asked, I know they have like 3 meters, so I asked the glucose meter test. And I taught myself how to test. And that was made a huge difference because now I'm just not in, I know that I eat the way out. And that's not good. So secondly, I researched information, what should glucose be at, what you should eat, and how many carbs.
So, Melissa, what specific tactics did you take to start to prevent diabetes?
Well, like I said, I got the meter, and then I started to test every meal. And you test before and after. And then I figured out, okay, what foods make my meter high, and what exact number of carbs I need per meal so it doesn't go high. So you can figure this out first by testing, but you can figure out how many carbs in each meal by just going to the app like MyFitnessPal. So for me personally, and it might be different for every person and talk to your doctor, it was between 50 and 20 grams per meal. I can't go not vegetable. So the motto is each person is different. You have to eat to your meter. So you have to figure out, you know, what your body can handle. And this way you're listening to your body. And then, of course, you know, I just increased green vegetables, even though they're carbs. They have all the nutrients you need. So taking about 7 to 10 cups a day. And I only eat berries. And then I started making up my own foods, low carb. And you can find these all on Pinterest. But I made my own crunchy crackers that are extremely low carb with almond and coconut flour. And then I freeze my own chocolate avocado ice cream, which is really smoothy and chocolatey great. And then I, just this week, I baked taco shells from green squash and cheese and made a taco. So you can get around it.
Wow. So how do you resist eating carbs since carbs are everywhere? The mall and at dinner, every street corner, and 70% of the grocery store.
Well, I think you have to totally change your mindset. And, you know, your stomach says, oh, I'm hungry, I need a carb. Your brain says, I need a carb. You know, I want that. But if it's not good for your body, you know, that's not good. So I kind of think as some foods like Cheerios are going to raise my level too high, I'm just going to cut them out because, you know, I'm not going to eat. So it's just like, to me, that's an unsafe. I think of it like an allergy, you know, or, I mean, I think one of the differences is that gluten, you feel the experience right away, you know, what your stomach goes through. But when you're glucose intolerant, you know, you don't feel any different. So you have to use your mind to say, I got to change. And then I stopped eating really high carbs like crackers, bread, piece of popcorn, canned. And you just have to make a choice in your head and have to say, you have to look for long term out there and say, I'm cutting these out or I'm going to eat less of because I don't want something to happen. An amputation, a blindness, or whatever down the road. And that's the reality. And so you say to yourself, I'm controlling.
So to add to Melissa's point really quickly, have you ever noticed in a grocery store when you shop on the outside, so not in the inner aisles, you can actually get all those items?
Well, and I think it's shocking. Like when you think of probably like 50, even 20 years ago, there weren't as many carbs as your store now. Like everything a car.
So usually when I was a coach, I would tell people, hey, go down around, go on the outer perimeters of the store. Normally, that's where you'll find the produce, the milk, the dairy, all the good stuff is on the outside. And when you go on the inside, that's where you're going to find other brands and things that we shouldn't be eating. So that's usually what my rule of thumb is.
Yeah, that's a great point.
That's what I do now. I have to.
So, Melissa, how do you deal with resisting carbs at special occasions like family dinners?
Well, an example is, you know, I try to plan my meals even at home, you know, what I'm going to eat for the day, because I want to keep my sugar not even low, but you have to keep it level. But for an example, last year at Thanksgiving, you know, most people eat like 2,000, what I used to do, 2,000 calories at one sitting. And so this time I called my sister-in-law and I said, you know, can I bring one of the appetizers? And I brought vegetables with dip. And I'm fine, you know, with the fatty foods. I still eat fatty foods. I just don't eat the carbs. So I filled up on that first. And then I eat as much turkey and gravy as I want. And then I had to say to myself, okay, you know, I can't have the bread, potatoes, and stuffing. But I can have the one I like the most is stuffing.
Me too.
So, you know, basically, if you were just diagnosed with prediabetes and you don't know where to start, the Innovateology salutes, just face it head on. You have to break free from eating habits, do a paradigm shift in your head and say, what is my body? And look for, you have to, you know, change your life and food with strength and determination. So one, go out and get that glucose meter and set your limits. Change your mindset about your food and then plan out your food strategies and you'll have more patience.
Well, Mary and Melissa, we covered a lot today with a lot of innovative solutions to handle food sensitivities, intolerances, and allergies. So thanks. I've learned a lot. And I hope those listening to today's podcast have learned a lot, too. Feedback is always important to us. So you can leave a comment on our website and let us know what you think and how you handle food sensitivities.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to the Innovateology Podcast. We hope we have generated some disruptive ideas and helped unleash that creative side. Please help us keep innovating and leave us a comment or a review on our website. Till next time, don't stop innovating.